I am Harris here recording another podcast here at the Scottish Chronic Centre.
And ready. That one didn't.
Is it possible that you could tell me a bit about this?
Of course. Yes, hello, my name is Izzy. So, basically, you start with the modern car park because, of course, if you had an Iron Age car park, then you'd probably get stuck in the mud every day. So, we've got our very non-Iron Age car park to go through. And then we've got two temporary pods. But then, once you've gone through the museum, you go into your Iron Age village. So in our inside museum, we've got all the artifacts, and they all need to be in a modern building to keep them safe and to make sure that they're definitely preserved. But the Iron Age village shows you how those objects were made, how they were used, how lots of different people use them, and they can be used in different ways as well. So what we don't do here is we don't say, this is that, this is that, this is that. We say, this could be this, or it could be used for this, or it could be this. There is always possibilities, and everything is very uncertain. But that is okay, because it's 2,500 years ago. They've not told us anything, so we're not always going to know everything anyway.
So would you say the goal is more seeing what history could have been than attempting to preserve, say, history?
Yes, basically, because we may never know what it was exactly like. So it's reconstructing it. I would never say replicate, because we probably can't ever replicate something from the Iron Age. But it's reconstructing lives, reconstructing buildings, tools and food and everything we can think of to bring it to life.
Okay, that's the sound of a starting horn. I'm going to speak to Izzy at the end, but first I'm going to speak to the other members of staff at this unique museum. As I'll find out, some of the staff are more part theatre and more part educator. It's a fascinating combination and I can't wait to see what I learn. Listen out for another horn at the end. First of all, can you state your name?
My name is Frances Collier Prickett and I give permission to be recorded.
Okay, Frances. Well, what would you say is the main thing that motivates you to study history, first of all?
I don't actually study history. I'm actually a theatre and film designer, but I'm motivated by an interest in history because a lot of my job involves researching lots of different time periods and understanding how the different factors of society influence the way people dress, the way people build, how their environment looks. So I'm interested in history and I'm interested in how it affects people sociologically when it comes to how I do my design work.
So you'd say you're interested in history because of the effect it's had on clothing and...
On everything. History affects absolutely everything, whether we realise it or not. For example, if I'm designing a play that's set in the 1920s, I have to not only look into what's happening in the 1920s, but what's happened beforehand. So Egyptology is incredibly interested, is one of the things that people are very interested in the 1920s. And that affects fashion, it affects interior design, it affects everything. So I have to look at the wider context. At this point, I'm going to have to let you go, my love.
Okay, thank you for the interview.
Okie dokie. Pop yourselves down, grab a seat if you'd like. If you've spent ages sat down and being talked at and want to stand, that's also absolutely fine. We are good.
Fabulous. Welcome to the woodworking area. My name is Frankie. In my modern day life, I am a theatre and film designer, which means I get a little bit obsessive about what things look like. So, woodworking is invaluable to the Crannog society. For one thing, without wood, we have no buildings. Without wood, we have no bowls and spoons for the cooking area. Without wood, we have no branches that we can turn into rope to hobble our animals so that we can have farmland. However, it's also showing the interconnectedness of society, because without the blacksmith, I have no tools. Without the cooking area, I have no food to give me the energy to make things. And without no clothes, with the wind coming off that loch, it's going to be absolutely freezing while I'm building the Crannog. So it shows how everything fits together. Now, how do we know how people were building things and how what kind of tools people were making? Do you think we've dug any tools up out of the loch that we can look at? What do you reckon? Do you think we found any tools? Nope. None. Now, that's because after 2,500 years, all the iron has rusted away. Or iron is incredibly valuable at this point in society. So if I drop something in the lock and I can still reach down and get it, I'm going to make sure that I get that out again. If it breaks, I'm going to take it to the blacksmith to fix it. Iron's really important to me. But what I can do is I can look at the marks that the tools have left on the crannog. Somebody actually did a PhD in that. They studied all the marks left on the crannog and they can tell us what tools were used. And from that, we know that people were using things like this. Do you know what that is? Axe. Excellent. Looks very much the same as it did today. How about this one? Oh, anyone know what that is? It's basically a sideways axe. This is called an adze, and this is very useful for hollowing things out. So when I'm making a boat, I might use this to take the middle out of it. Now, we down there, we have a great big whacking great big tree. I've forgotten the word. Trunk. There we go. I wanted to say stump. You can tell I'm a natural woodworker. That big old tree trunk that's going to get chopped in half using these. So you hammer these in and they split it open and then you've got your boat left at the bottom. Be hollowed out using adzes and axes, and then what they might well do is they might well set a fire inside it to smooth off the inside, but also the fire will help preserve it. It'll help harden it. We're going to do one out here with Iron Age tools, and we've got another big one round the back in our backstage area that will be done with chainsaws. And it'll be a race, and we'll see who gets finished first and whose one is best at the end. The other thing that we've got during the Iron Age, we have these. Any guesses? Chisel, exactly. It looks exactly the same as it did 2,500 years ago. And I also have a special curvy chisel. Thank you very much, my glamorous assistant. And this is called a gouge. And this works very much like an actual chisel does. Do you want to move that in case it makes it go jumpy? There we go. Your wallop on the end. Anyone want to have a go? Yeah, there we go. Tell you what, we'll do two people on this one and then two people on the next bit of kit, okay? Oh, we're doing it with my hand, okay. Hey, there we go. And I still have fingers left. Round of applause for my glamorous assistants, please. Thank you very much. Right, so that's how we're going to hollow things out. That's how we're going to shape things using our gouge. But if you have a look around this building, can you see that it's held together with these little wooden pegs? So to get these little wooden pegs, we need to drill holes in the wood, don't we? And do you think we have power tools? Do you think we have power drills back in the Iron Age? No, we do not. We have these. This is called a spoon auger. And I can power this with human power. So I pop it in there, and then I can either twist it around with my hands or do it the much more fun way, which is by doing that. So who wants to have a go with this one? You? And you with the blue, with the excellent dinosaur wellies. So this is, whee! There we go, we got dizzy on that one. So this is great for wood. It's not so great for stone, for which we would use something like this. This is great for wood and stone. This is a pump drill, so-called, because it works basically like a yo-yo. So you spin that way around. Hey, there we go. It's like a yo-yo. And if you're good at doing a yo-yo, you'll be good at this. Because you've got to try and get the rhythm right. Because if you don't, you end up doing that. Anyone want to give it a try? Excellent stuff. And go. Yes, yes. There we go. Oh, well done. Nice job. Thank you very much. Round of applause for that round of glamorous assistance, please. Thank you very much indeed. So yes, so we're drilling holes and then we've got to find something to put in them, haven't we? We've got to get these pegs. So I can use this to do that. This is my draw horse. And I pop myself down here, and it's so cool because when I'm using it, I look like I'm riding a horsey. So this is particularly useful for long bits of wood because this could be 5, 10, 15, 20 feet long and I can still use it. I'm securing it with my feet by pushing ahead of myself, and then I use this, which is called a draw knife, and pull towards myself. The other thing I can use to make those little poles is I can use this. This is called a pole lathe. So this is considerably easier because this hand's out of the way this time. So what you do is as you push down, you push in. This is very much the same way a lathe works today, but instead of being powered by electricity, it's powered by me. Now, we know that people had one of these back in the Iron Age on the Oakbank Crannog because we found something like this. Now, if this looks like absolute rubbish, that's because it is. This is called a waster, and this is the bit that you chop off the end of the wood when you finish using the lathe. Now, because we know that they are using the lathe, we know that they could make things like this. We know that they can make bowls and cups. This was made on the lathe by Toby, who is our resident woodwork wizard. He is considerably better than me, but he also cuts his hands more than I do. So, you know. This took him 6 weeks to make on that. His uncle used modern day tools and it took him 6 months to make something similar. So while not only can we tell about how people are making things from the wood that we're finding, we can tell about the environment that they lived in. So the kind of wood that we're finding includes elm, oak, hazel, rowan, Scots pine. So we know they're living in mostly deciduous forests. So what you know about the kind of landscape they're living in. We know as well that kind of around the loch, there's the crannogs and the settlements. We know that out from that, there's the farmland. Then there's your deciduous woodland. Then up on the hills is the grazing area. And that's where you kids would all get sent over the summer holidays. Because that's the origin of summer holidays. The kids get sent up onto the hill to go and look after the sheep and the goats. Do you think you'd fancy doing that instead of having a mess around here instead? I'm just going to take you through to textiles just now and then I'm going to go find a plaster.
I have to say that Frances was both entertaining and captivating. I hope you're enjoying the adventure of historic Dunkeld at the Scottish Crannog Centre. Unfortunately, I have a rule of keeping episodes down to 10 minutes or less. So, if you'd like, please click on the next episode. I have been Harris O'Brien. Until then, bye!